Hello, welcome to The Addict's Advocate, a podcast geared towards the suffering addict and those in recovery. This podcast does not provide any medical advice. No material on this podcast is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Addict's Advocate, a podcast geared towards those suffering from addiction as well as those in recovery. Thank you for listening this morning. And if you do like this podcast and you find that it's beneficial for you, please like and subscribe. It greatly helps us continue this movement that we are trying to embark on. It's my pleasure to have today with us a friend by the name of Jay. Jay is someone who's been in recovery for some time now, and we're excited to have him. How are you doing this morning, sir?
I'm doing good, Dusty. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So just to kind of start off the show, as we always like to do, let's give a little background on yourself.
So I'm a 57-year-old male, work in the tech industry. As far as drinking goes, I've been drinking most of my life. Probably these last 4 months of sobriety have been the longest stretch that I've ever put together, really since I was a teenager. My drinking started like most guys, hanging out with friends on the weekend, progressing into weekend binge drinking during the college years, and has just been progressing ever since. Like many people, it was really during the COVID lockdown that things started to ratchet up to daily drinking, and I really wasn't able to reel things back in after the pandemic was over, and that's when I started looking for help.
Okay. I understand that for the most part, most of the people around you didn't recognize the problem, and if anything, were kind of maybe shocked that you went into treatment. Is that correct?
It was. You know, it's one of these things where, you know, myself, I've been in denial for many years, you know, because I was a high functioning alcoholic. I've been able to cultivate a successful career in technology, get married, young son, good friends, and good social life. So I haven't really had to deal with any major consequences. You know, sure, there was a couple of DUIs in college, but, you know, that was, you know, me and my dumb fuck friends, it seemed to be normal, par for the course kind of thing. So it didn't really view that so negatively. But that said, over the last few years, as my drinking progressed, I recognize I was much less present in my marriage and my family life, and my work was beginning to slip as well. So I really began to come to grips with my addiction when I was trying to taper things off. You know, it's interesting, you know, how well I hid things, because when I explained to my wife that this was something that I needed to do, I needed to put myself in the detox, and it was something I couldn't handle on my own, she was somewhat in shock. Yeah, she knew I liked to drink. She knew on occasion I would get really drunk and she'd get a little mad at me for doing dumb shit things. And sometimes I would forget some things, but she didn't see how bad it was just because I was doing such a good job of hiding things from her. Or maybe she was in a certain amount of denial as well. You know, I mean, sometimes it's a two-way street and she just chose to look the other way. But nonetheless, it was something that we both had to come to grips with and recognize that I needed some kind of structured help with.
Wow. Thank you. Was there a singular moment in time that was kind of like the catalyst for you? Do you remember something distinctly that made you say, nope, okay, I'm done here. I got to go get help?
You know, it's interesting, you know, I hear so many stories from other people where there was that moment of clarity, if you will, you know, but for me, there wasn't a single event or any real bottoming out moment. You know, I think I was somewhat fortunate enough that I was prescient enough to see that if I didn't do something now, that I could lose my family. I could lose my job, my health, and that I really owed it to my family and to myself to take drastic steps to prevent that from happening. You know, it was one of these things where, you know, my wife was on a business trip and I proceeded to go on a 4-day bender, as I would often do when she was out of town, and trying to basically take a couple days off of a drinking after that was so extremely painful for me, and the horrible withdrawal symptoms that that, you know, I told myself that, you know, I need to do something. I sat my wife down and told her that I needed to check myself into a detox center. And it was really upon exiting the detox center and entering into this intense outpatient program, or IOP as it's known, that I really began my journey with sobriety.
Wow. And now how is their response been, the family around you, with regards to the sobriety?
Overall positive, but, you know, strangely a little bit mixed. You know, while my wife is proud of what I'm doing and is supportive of my efforts, you know, I mentioned she was somewhat surprised by it all. And, you know, and a big challenge for her is trying to figure out her role in my recovery, trying to figure out how am I supposed to be supportive and, you know, understanding that, you know, recovery is a selfish thing. It's something you need to do by yourself. And you know, you talk about how alcoholics tend to isolate. Well, when you're in recovery, your family loses you in some respects to recovery as well. But after she had the time to process it all, it made much more sense to her. But in the moment, she wasn't seeing how bad my addiction was. So while she was trying to be supportive, she also had some negative views around AA and Al-Anon, having dated an alcoholic in her 20s, and kind of views the whole thing as very cult-like. And so it's been a learning experience for us both, because she saw a very negative side of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was also, I guess the best way to put it is, she was young and didn't know what to think of that. Dealing with alcoholism and alcoholics is not something for the faint of heart, I guess is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is there's also, I've found, just, you know, from family members relaying it to me, is that there's a new version of you now, right? And yeah. if you haven't, if that version of you hasn't been seen by anyone for any substantial period of time, for a good long period of time, because you've been in an addiction, it takes them getting used to from their perspective. Because, yeah, I mean, we know that addictions obviously affect mental health, and the moods, right, the attitudes towards things in life, I find for myself personally, are drastically different now. Is that a same type of experience for you? Is there some getting used to of the new you, the new Jay?
There has been, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, my wife is one, trying to figure out her role in the whole thing. And two, you know, and I'm guilty of this as well, as, you know, sort of romanticizing the social aspects of alcohol in our lives. And that part is gone. You know, when my wife and I were dating, you know, Christmas tree shopping, we'd fill up a thermos of hot chocolate, you know, with some peppermint schnapps, you know, relatively tame stuff, but something that we would regularly do. Wine tasting was an important part of our dating life, and you know, recent trip to Italy, the same, you know, and those were some of the fonder things that we used to do that involved alcohol, and those things I can't participate anymore. And so it's been an adjustment, not just for me, because I'm not drinking. And honestly, I think it's been harder for her, because she enjoyed that aspect of our relationship. And we're looking for other things that we can do. The good news is we're both foodies and we like nice things and nice vacations. I think there are other ways that we can enjoy ourselves together. So it's a little bit of a pivot. I think it's just been a tougher adjustment for her. And that's just a minor thing. You know, it's interesting that, you know, we talk about me being more present and being more there, where I think over time, my wife had maybe adjusted to a a tamer version of myself that had less opinions, you know, and that's... You know, part of it was being drunk and not wanting to get into an argument with my wife and just sort of going along. I've always had opinions, but it was, but when you're a little bit out of the right frame of mind, you know, I tried not to voice them in an effort to not get into a fight with her, but I do voice them now. I still don't want to fight with my wife, but I find that I'm probably a little bit I don't want to say forceful, but a little bit stronger in my opinion about things than she's been used to in the past.
Interesting. Yeah, and for me, it's kind of like the opposite. When I was in my addictions, I was very, very, very strong, opinionated, and now that I'm in recovery. And I've also obviously addressed my mental health. I feel a lot more laid back now, and so that's kind of a shock for a lot of people around me. They're like, "You used to be so strong-willed about some things," and I'm like, "Yeah, it's not that big of a deal anymore."
well, don't get me wrong. I had my moments where I would take a stand and would try to die on the hill that didn't seem to have a real purpose. But I tried to avoid that as much as possible because I knew that wasn't getting me anywhere.
Right, right. You had mentioned something interesting just now, just as far as the whole romanticizing of alcohol.
Yeah.
I in a previous life had operated a winery for a small period of time, and just obviously the notion of working in a winery, owning a winery, tasting rooms, and, you know, weekend getaways, it's all romantic. And what I found was that, especially in my tasting room on the weekends, is that I felt like I was serving functioning alcoholics. So there was almost like a moral dilemma associated with doing that. And yet that's the thing with society, right? Is that we've romanticized alcohol, and it's almost a staple, right? It's a staple in our pastime that, it's so ingrained from media and this, you know, traditional realms that it's something that, you know, is a dangerous thing. I mean, and even studies right now are coming out saying, look, you know, this whole notion of one glass a night of wine, you know, it's still not good for you. You're drinking poison. And it's doing, you know, long-term effects to you. And so they're just saying, you know, the abstinence and what it does to the body is a blessing. It's a godsend. It's something that people need to seriously take a look at. You know, we have these dry months, right, where people embark on, you know, dry Januaries and they feel so much better, but then they don't recognize that, wow, I feel so much better. Why don't I just stay like this?
Yeah.
Going back and drinking again, you know, or doing whatever they're doing. Did you find that your mental health was your mental health was taking a toll?
In the midst of my addiction, for sure. But, you know, interestingly enough, early sobriety can also be just as stressful in some ways. You know, it was interesting where, you know, crawling inside of a bottle was how I coped with life's stressors, and I had to find other ways to manage. You know, because I was in a medically assisted sobriety program, the IOP that I referenced before, you know, it's a combination of group therapy as well as some psychoeducation, but there's also a medical aspect where I'm taking prescriptions for anti-anxiety, anti-craving, antidepressant, and, you know, and many of those things help to keep my head level during those early days of sobriety. But then there was still a certain sense of loss that comes with quitting drinking that I was dealing with as well. You know, I talked about before romanticizing, you know, alcohol and, you know, the reality was drinking was an important part of my life, just beyond just the physical dependency of it all. You know, it was how I socialized with peers, family, business associates. And, you know, it was really getting sober that has had a positive impact on my overall mental health, but it hasn't been without its challenges. You know, there is a certain amount of low grade depression, knowing that my life is different, you know, albeit for the better. You know, I can intellectualize it and recognize that what I'm doing is better for myself, better for my family and my overall well being. But there, that little sense of loss still nags me a bit. And it's something that I still deal with.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing, right? I've heard counselors say that if you're not experiencing, you know, some sort of a depressive state, post, once you become clean, then, you know, there's something wrong, right? Because you should definitely, right? If you're in an addiction battle with, you know, with dopamine receptors being depressed. And yeah, it's interesting because I feel the same way as you do, is that, you know, there was definitely a, a sense of a loss of a relationship, as weird as it is, right? This is something that I did. I hung out with Lady Alcohol, or, you know, you know, or I hung out with Brother Weed, and you know, we did things together, you know. So now it's like, oh, well, I'm all alone now. You know, I've got my family and stuff, but I'm all alone from my sidecar, my sidekick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what struggles have you found while trying to maintain your sobriety right now?
Many, you know, the challenges are there. Part of it is, you know, because drinking is everywhere, you know, it's part of our social fabric, you know, amongst my peers, it's something that I used to participate in and no longer do. When I'm back in those social circles, you know, you can't help but feeling a little bit like the odd man out by not participating. You know, some of it, you know, in fact, probably most of it is all up in my head. I'm noticing it more than anyone else is noticing it. And you know, the good news for me is that being around alcohol or people that are drinking was not really a trigger for me. But it does remind me of those times. And it's difficult to not look back on those times fondly, you know. And, you know, that is definitely part of the struggles. My triggers were really more to do with things like work and family and general life stress and having to develop new coping skills and new support structures to help me deal with those stressors is basically the way that I've had to pivot and manage that, you know, and dealing with downtime. You know, it's one of those things where you don't want to fill up every waking moment of every day, because that's impossible to try to maintain to keep your mind from drifting and thinking about drinking or other negative things. But it is a very delicate balance for sure.
You know, something profound you said is that, yeah, there's going to be a struggle with the longer we are away from it, right? I personally have abstained from alcohol, you know, regardless of what else I was using, but I definitely had gotten to the point, you know, 5-6 years into it that I was like, oh, I got this. You know, I've toned that beast. I can go back and drink in moderation. And it was both times, you know, were epic fails. The second one leading to, you know, to me physically, you know, going and seeking help. So, you know, and that's obviously, you know, important to keep in mind, right? Is we've got to remember, right? As far away as we are from it, we have to remember how bad it was. And it's almost like, you know, sometimes I wish we had videotapes. I had videotapes of some of my actions and behaviors, you know, during those times. But fortunately, my memory is, I think, strong enough to sit there and go, no, remember when you did this? Oh, yeah, never mind. I won't drink. What sort of routine or daily habits have you found have been helping you?
A few actually, you know, having a structured schedule is important to me, you know, things like staying busy with work and just feeling like my day has some value and purpose is definitely helpful. You know, I mentioned downtime and boredom and, you know, and part of that is making sure that, that you're staying active, you know, weekend activities with the family, exercise or tinkering in the garage is also great for my mental health. In our support group, it was also always stressed, you know, not to overbook yourself, really, I should say, and to make sure you have downtime to just turn off and focus on yourself, self-care, really. You know, that has probably been one of the more difficult things for me to indulge in. And that's really the way I view it, is kind of an indulgence. I feel like I can't take that kind of time away from my family without feeling some guilt. I do try to put in the effort, but I feel like I've already robbed them of myself for many years because I haven't been able to put in the quality time with them that, you know, part of me wants to make sure that I'm trying to make up for it now, but it's also important for my own sanity to make sure I'm carving out some of that alone time, that me time where I can sort of recover and regroup and basically sort of tune out for a little bit. You know, I think we all need a little bit of that.
I agree. You know, we can't be all things to everyone because then we're nothing to ourselves, right? And like the whole adage is about, you know, the airplane, you know, mask, safety mask, right? You put your mask on first before you put it on any of your loved ones. So yeah, we have to, you know, we should always be priority number one in our lives, right? As much as we like to say that we're great fathers, you know, and we're great husbands, and we're always there for them, and you know, and whatever is needed, yeah, sure, we can be those things, right? But we have to take care of ourselves. And I've found some really cool things, you know, in sobriety. I think, you know, we'd spoken in the past in one of the groups about something called a sound bath. And that's it's a meditative experience. And it's it really kind of opened my eyes to just, you know, the connection of our senses with our body and our brain. And then I think, you know, that there's a whole new, like I said, a whole new discovery of ourselves that I think is important. And I think I brought this up in another conversation. What's interesting is that, you know, there's, you know, some that are in recovery are always, you know, sad because of the time that they've lost, if you will, right, while they were in their addiction. And yet, I think that there are a lot of people in this world that aren't in an addiction, that are never present in their lives. And I think that's the one thing that going into recovery really does for us, is that it gives us the notion to be truly present in everything that we're doing. And I think is a blessing, right? It's high quality time, you know, every moment of every day.
For sure.
So I think that's a good thing. How important has the sober community been for you in your success in maintaining sobriety?
Huge. You know, it's interesting. You know, this was my first time in recovery, so this has been quite the learning experience for me. And I didn't recognize just how significant and how important of a component that really is. You know, I always thought of, you know, quitting drinking and going into recovery was all about sort of sheer strength of will. You just decide you're not going to do this and you suck it up and you do it. And while that is a component of it, it is not all of it. Having this sober community has been extremely important. And, you know, I get a ton of support from my IOP support group. And I found I liked also having the accountability to someone other than myself and my family. And while family support is important, it's not the same as from a peer group that are dealing with the same issues and can provide a level of empathy that you really can't find elsewhere. You know, and one of the things that was stressed during our group therapy sessions and while I was in the outpatient program was making sure that you build this community. Building this community of peers and others, you know, it could be friends, family, loved ones, but basically someone else who understands this struggle that you're going through, someone that you can reach out to. And it's not necessarily someone that you need to get on a phone call with on an hour a day, because who has that time? But sometimes it's just checking in. You know, what we found, group texts was a way to feel connected and accountable when you're having a moment feeling stressful. It's a channel, a way to reach out. You know, technology is a wonderful thing. You know, some people feel that it has turned the human connection into a very informal thing, but I think the ease in which you have the ability to reach out to someone, anyone, many people, and you think about how large your connected community is, and it's rare that you don't have someone that you can turn to from one mechanism to another, whether it's a text or an email or a phone call or a podcast. You know, it's there are many different ways to reach out to other people. And so, you know, in addition to my IOP group, you know, I've been looking at other outlets. You know, I've been trying AA out. You know, it's I'm still trying to find the right fit. I know every group and every meeting has its own personality, and so I've been trying a few out for size and seeing which ones resonate with me. Also trying another secular group called Life Ring, which is interesting. Group therapy, kind of a check-in, similar to what we were doing in group therapy, but it's a way to connect with a similar group of like-minded individuals that are dealing with the same life struggles. And I feel that's been a very important component of my sobriety.
Nice. Yeah, I've only heard of Life Ring, you know, through IOP, and it's something that I might be interested in checking out for sure. And, you know, when I think when we're in our addictions, right, and we have this feeling of judgment for something that we're doing wrong, right, we feel like the others around us are kind of judge, jury, and executioner. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think in sobriety, it's no longer that feeling of the people around you that are supporting you. It feels like it's all the same team. And I think that's a nice way of, I think that's part of just the mental healing too, is that you're not constantly on the stand, you know, being tried for everything that you're doing. You have people that are cheering you on. And even if you were to unfortunately strike out, let's say, right, there's always another up at bat, and your family's not going to point fingers at you. You know, your support group's not going to point fingers at you. They're going to try to raise you up. And I think that's a massive blessing.
For sure.
So any surprising revelations for yourself that in your sobriety?
It's an interesting question. You know, things like finding sugar and caffeine so enjoyable is probably not surprising to anyone else that is in recovery. I think that's a common thread amongst all others that I deal with in recovery. But obviously being more present in my days with my family. But probably the one surprising area is I've never slept better. And probably why it's surprising is because so many others I know in recovery have been having the exact opposite. I'm now able to sleep more soundly than I ever have when I was drinking. You know, a certain amount of that is that I'm actually sleeping versus just losing consciousness for X number of hours per day. I think a certain amount of it is that there's a certain amount of stress relief from opening up to my peers and my family about my addiction and having their support, which has given me a little bit more peace of mind, I think, which is contributing to things. I know I'm being a better employee, a better father, and a better husband, and it, certainly trying to be better at all those things. And I think that provides a certain peace of mind that allows me to sleep better. But it's probably more than anything else is, you know, and not surprising, but, you know, it's just my ability to focus on things from the trivial to the significant that is enhanced considerably. And, you know, the reason why it's not surprising is, you know, when your brain power hasn't been blunted, I mean, clearly you're going to be able to focus and be present on things. But I feel that I'm much more in the moment and much more appreciative of those moments that, you know, I regret not having done this years early.
You know, the two things you brought up that resonate with me. The number one is, yes, I agree with you. I can't believe everything tastes so much better. and of course, my waistline's paying the price for it.
Yeah, you and me both, brother.
But, you know, for the most part, the interesting thing is that I'm engaged when I train now, when I work out. I'm truly engaged, and I'm setting goals, and so that's been a positive. The other thing that you brought up, which was interesting to me, was if you could just, you know, somebody that was in the throes of addiction, you could sit there and go, there's a treasure trove of things waiting for you in your sobriety. And you may not know what they are, and they may be surprising to you, but when it's said and done, you're going to open up that box, and you're going to get these gifts that you probably didn't even think about that are going to be massive blessings in your life. And you're going to say the same thing as we all say, gosh, I wish I would have done this sooner. And I think that's a piece of advice, you know, for someone who's dealing with, you know, the notion that maybe I have a problem, right? Maybe I need to take a good look at myself. And is there any sort of, you know, gems of wisdom, you know, from your journey that you feel that keep on resonating with you on a constant basis?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple things that really spring to mind, you know, and one of them goes back to some of the psychoeducational aspects of the outpatient program that I went into. And, you know, and one of the things that was extremely valuable to anyone that's dealing with addiction is to better understand the nature of the disease. You know, understanding the powerful physiological effects of addiction was huge, not just in helping me, but my family better comprehend that my drinking was not a character flaw or due to a lack of willpower, but really this combination of genetics and environmental influences that triggered this disease that really truly requires a regimented treatment and lifelong commitment. And, you know, to the casual observer, you know, a drinking problem is just that, a character flaw. It's something that you should be able to overcome if you had enough fortitude to do so. And that psychoeducation was huge. You know, there was this incredible video that we watched, and you know the one I'm talking about, Dr. Nicole Labor, which basically went into really great layman's details. I recommend this to anyone, not just anyone that's afflicted with addiction or their family, but anyone that's curious to better understand the human dynamics around addiction in general. It was extremely fascinating and eye-opening, and it was so much of it that resonated with me that I brought it back to, you know, to have my friends and family watch it too. And I just felt like this is something that I wish I would have learned earlier. And that's just one component, but, you know, something else that that I would say was a nice little gem, a little kernel of truth that learned during this journey was something that we also talked about considerably during our group sessions. And that's really the significance of surrendering to the process versus just complying with it. Just really the difference between open and willing on your own to accept change versus maybe being forced by the courts, work, or family, where you can't just go along with the program and expect to see the greatest benefits. You need to be open-minded and accepting of the fact that you, one, need help, and that, two, help is out there. But there is an importance in being in the right frame of mind to be able to really reap the benefits of putting yourself into a program that's going to help you come through the other side and put you on a path of recovery.
Beautiful. This has been a great interview. I appreciate it.
For sure.
So let's say you're walking down the street.
Yeah.
Someone recognizes you, knows that you're in recovery, and is contemplating seeking help. You've got 30 seconds to change their mind or to give them maybe some insight. What would you say to them?
Someone that's really ready to do it is the right person to talk to, right? You and I know that your head needs to be there, but if their head is there, the biggest piece of advice I can give them is to do it now. You know, while it's never too late to make that change, you know, as I mentioned before, I regret that I waited till I was 57 to try to improve my life. You know, the challenge is I may not have been ready to embrace sobriety earlier, but I truly feel it was the best decision I could have made for myself, my family, improving the overall quality of my life. And, you know, it's through that clarity of looking back at where I was and where I am now. And, you know, granted, I'm only 4 months into this. I'm still in the beginning of this journey, but just the clarity of mind and the benefits that I'm already beginning to see in my life are truly profound. And, you know, it might be difficult to impress that upon someone within a 30-second conversation. But more important than anything else, I would make sure that they understood that they would have my support and my guidance and my friendship, because that's one of the most important things for anyone that's looking to go through this.
Wow. Jay, I think that was a great way to end this conversation, and I truly appreciate your time today. And this is the Addict Advocate, again, thanking Jay for his conversation and his insight and his wisdom. With 4 months in, truly some profound kernels there that I definitely am going to carry with myself, as well as pass on to others that I interface with in life who are in recovery or, potentially contemplating seeking help. With that, again, I'd just like to say thank you, sir, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, Dusty. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
You too.